Good afternoon, my AOWs. Thank you guys so much for joining me for this episode today. This one is going to be a good one. Buckle up. I've got a lot to say. In this episode, we're talking about rebranding menopause. Maybe, maybe not. Should it or should it not be hormone deficiency syndrome? And I have a lot to say on this topic. I've been watching this discourse float about on the internet, Instagram, social media for the last year and a half. And, you know, for most of the time, I keep my opinions, which I do have, to myself. But looks like it's time to unleash those. All right, let's go.
Welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening to the show. If you love the show, you're going to love my new book, Unlock Your Menopause Type. This book is really meant to help you identify and target and therefore best treat your most bothersome menopause symptoms. In the book, I go through all the different ways menopause can be treated with HRT, of course, non-hormonal therapies, and diet, exercise, and lifestyle. You can get the book anywhere books are sold. And if you are so inclined, please leave a book review wherever you bought your book. I will absolutely be thanking you. I hope you enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. Good afternoon, my AOWs. Wow. Today in this podcast, we're talking about this concept of menopause and its potential rebranding or not rebranding as hormone deficiency syndrome. Now, this actually all came up because of something that happened earlier in the week where I commented on a friend of mine's post and I guess had a little bit of a professional disagreement. And I use the word professional because one of the things that actually I wanted to use this platform, this podcast to talk about today is the fact that over the last, you know, many, many years of prescribing and being a menopause and midlife doctor and shock absorbing thousands of your stories, I have developed something called an opinion and developed an opinion. And, you know, for the majority of my professional life, isn't even as I have started to grow on TikTok and started to do more public appearances, I really actually try to keep my opinions as just that, my opinions. And the lines do get blurred though, in some instances. And that's really because of two important things. One is clinical experience. Clinical experience. What clinical experience really means to me is there tends to be researchers who are really heavy on the research, consider themselves experts because they're doing all the research and writing the papers. But because they're busy doing that, which takes a lot of time and energy, they're not in the field. They're not seeing all the patients, or maybe they did years ago, or maybe now they say two or three a month, right? I'm exaggerating. Clinical experience has given me such an immense opinion. And not only is it a little bit of clinical experience, but a significant amount of clinical experience. Because midlife and menopause and perimenopause is all I do, day in and day out, patient after patient, no delivering babies, no surgeries, no abnormal pap smears, no colposcopies, no talking about vaginitis, BV, this or that. I just do menopause day in and day out. I was thinking about this last night because I couldn't sleep for a while. Have you ever seen one of those hex codes where you're playing with the color schemes, you're doing branding or something, and you're just like, wow, you're moving that little ball around and you're like, I can't believe there's this many colors to choose from. That's how many patients I feel like I have seen. That's how many different stories I think I have seen. That's how many different ways I have treated midlife, perimenopause, and menopause. And that has given me immense clinical experience. The other thing is that I come from an academic background. If you don't know, I was an OBGYN for a year and a half. I decided that Interestingly, that's a long story in and of itself, but I loved helping women make complex decisions. I actually didn't really love surgery, and it was kind of a toxic environment. So I transitioned to internal medicine. So I was an intern twice, and then I did a fellowship at Cleveland Clinic in advanced women's health. And it was there that I realized there is such a gap in care among late reproductive care, because even Drew Barrymore was standing next to me before we went to do the Oprah, and she looks at me and she's like, "Aren't you about 40? I said, "Yeah." She's like, why do you care about this so much? Like literally just really asking off the top of her head because she was interested. And actually a lot of patients are too. And I said, because no one gives a crap about women after they have children. And she was like, "Yeah, you're so right." And gosh, I love Drew Barrymore so much. Just so much. I just love Drew Barrymore so much. She brings so much joy into the world. Like this is a riff, but she is just the one, I feel as though incredible celebrity who is just so wonderful and open-minded and just lovely. And interested in other people's stories. I feel as though it's probably, a parasocial thing, but I feel like we both are very interested in other people's stories and the individual journeys that people have and what that means collectively. All right, enough about Drew. What I was saying is that I come from this academic background where you are really, in some ways, taught, right? After I did fellowship, I went to Ohio State, and then I went to Harvard and founded this amazing clinic at Ohio State and then at Harvard, and then helped Mitty build their clinic and then have been building my clinic. So I know a thing or two about that. But in academics, you're really, in many ways, really not, you're taught to really not have an opinion. Your opinion is evidence-based medicine or bust. And that's okay. I practice evidence-based medicine. I absolutely talk about evidence-based medicine for the last decade. I prescribe FDA-approved HRT to my patients. And you're really not taught to have an opinion. And if you do, you've got to like stuff it down and don't even dare say it on any platform. It used to be Twitter. Do you remember opinions are my own? That was so crucial. So crucial to academic institutions. They actually would say that in their social media policy. So I am not making this up. I have lived a life. I am welcome now at this point to talk about that. And so I really have come from this point where I have really struggled to actually be kind of more open about my opinion, because actually in the grand scheme of things, truth be told, my opinion is just that. It doesn't matter that much. What matters is that women get access to care. What matters is that women are seen and heard and ultimately treated. That's what matters. But along the way, I think I have earned the right to have an opinion, and to now let that opinion out into the world. And I'm going to do it on my podcast because I feel like that's the best place to probably do this. So I was a little triggered yesterday because I'm not going to use people's names. I'm going to say this is all alleged. None of this is true. This is just my opinion. Opinions are my own and do not represent that of my employee, which is me. It was a post about, is menopause hormone deficiency syndrome? And in fact, I am just going to read it to you. And before I read it to you, I kind of want to give you a little bit of background. There's a clinician, also hopefully still a good friend of mine, who lives across the pond. And she has been advocating very strongly for menopause care for many, many years. And if academics really don't want you to have an opinion, entrepreneurship is on the other side of the spectrum. And it makes academics nervous, and make of that what you will. And this clinician, he or she has been very, very active in treating women and discussing the benefits of hormone replacement therapy and really starting, I guess, what you could call a movement, even before, I would say, the more recent sort of pandemic movement started. And because of that, a paper was written in response to that. And I'm actually going to read you some snippets. And this is not alleged. You can find this paper. It's in the British Medical Journal. It's called Normalizing Menopause, BMJ 2022. And the author and colleagues argue that social and cultural attitudes contribute to the varied experience of menopause and that medicalization is fueling negative perceptions. It is my opinion, and my opinion only, that this is potentially in response to a social media movement of women talking about HRT and academics clashing with that. All right, if you're vibing with me, I'm going to read actually a little bit more from this because I actually found it quite fascinating. Hold on one second, because I got to find the exact thing that I found fascinating. Here it is. Again, you can read this yourself. It reads, I'm sorry, there's lots of While media attention in the UK may give the impression that growing numbers of women are struggling to cope with menopausal symptoms and are seeking hormonal treatment, there's no universal experience. And most women prefer not to take medication unless their symptoms are severe. In fact, they go on to say that they argue that the medicalization, the subtext here is treating women with HRT. We argue that the medicalization, treating women with HRT, of menopause risks collapsing the wide range of experiences at the average age associated with this natural process into a narrowly defined disease requiring treatment. Medicalization tends to emphasize the negative aspects of menopause, and while effective treatments are important for those with troubling symptoms, i.e. it has to be really, really bad, sweetie, medicalization may increase women's anxiety and apprehension about this natural life stage. Wow. Wow. I actually never read that until today. So that seems to be if I am following along, if I'm any kind of human with a brain who's been on social media in the menopause space, that seems to be an academic response to the growing social media movement to a person's private practice. Now, here's the next thing I want to say. There is gaps in what we know about hormone therapy. And before I get into those gaps, let me talk to you about medicalization, over-medicalization. In the United States, where I live, if you're listening to this, before the WHI, at the peak of HRT use, about 45 to 55% and possibly more, depending of women, were on HRT. And I'm going to tell you right now, sitting in this chair, 80 to 90% of women are good candidates for HRT. Most women are. Does that mean all women need HRT? No. Does that mean that everyone should take it? No. Does that mean you're doomed if you don't take it? No. Does that mean you're going to crumple up and die if you don't take it? No. But does it mean that the majority of women are good candidates? And I would love to see from in my lifetime, it go from where it is currently in 2023, about 5 to 7%, maybe 10%. Let's even juice it up because of the pandemic. 10% of women are on FDA-approved HRT. I'd love to see that hit 20%. I'd love to see that hit 20% because here is what I know, my opinion. When I was giving grand rounds a couple years ago, I usually give grand rounds about menopause, and I do spend a majority of the time talking about hormone replacement therapy because that is what doctors and clinicians were never taught, never trained on. And biases about HRT have grown. I wrote a whole paper on it in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2020. You can go read that as well. This doctor stood up and he said, well, Dr. Hirsch, women don't want HRT. And that's exactly what the British Medical Journal is also apparently saying. Women don't want it, and you're making women feel anxious because you're talking about it. This to me is, I do have an opinion on this. I'm pretty sure you can tell what my opinion is. I don't think that that's remotely true. I think that that is backlash. I'm going to use words like jealousy, insecurity, instability, losing resources. One of the things all come down to in life, access to resources, right? Ego.
You make your own assumptions. I'm not naming any names. Now, in response to that, a doctor in the United States, who shall not be named, had posted publicly, and you are welcome to try to find it if you would like, but posted publicly that she also believes that that there is an over-medicalization of menopause for indications that it doesn't exist for. Oh, I was going to talk to you about how there's gaps in what we know about HRT. I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there in a second. This is actually more appropriate timeline. And that there are, you know, claiming that there are doctors prescribing HRT for indications that it's not indicated for, and that the term female hormone deficiency syndrome, which this other doctor in the UK, I believe, had used or brought up or, you know, suggested as a I don't know, rebranding or whatever. Again, all alleged. Really doubled down on that and said it is not female hormone deficiency. That is, in her words, insulting. And there has been over-medicalization. Those clearly stated public facts. And this doctor says that often. And this doctor I respect and really like, and like all of her stuff. So there are gaps in what we know about HRT. I've already said I actually don't believe it's being over-medicalized. If 5-7% of women are on FDA-approved HRT, many, many more women are on unapproved pellet injections because they don't have doctors who are quote-unquote medicalizing it, aka treating it, okay? And we are harming women in this country and other countries because they are seeking out unregulated medications because their own doctors don't want to treat it. You could say the same thing about childbirth. Have we over-medicalized childbirth? We should all just have home births now, right? I mean, right. And there's a lot about HRT that we don't know. Here's what we do know. And I say this all the time. I say this to my patients every single day, multiple times a day. And I teach this to all the students in my healthcare providers course, which is coming out next week. Brand new, shiny, and updated. FDA hormone replacement therapy has 4 indications: hot flashes, night sweats, genitourinary syndrome of menopause, that's severe, osteopenia. And to go so far to say that if you are strictly evidence-based, and I believe Joanne Manson has said this on Peter Atria's podcast, FDA-approved hormone therapy is FDA-approved for severe hot flashes. It's got to be severe. The textbook says 27 a week, 7 a day, 7 times 7 is 46. I can't do math in real time. You know, that's what, guys, this is silly. We do not have a mass ton of trials on hormone replacement therapy. And so you can be an academic, and I appreciate that, and I need you. And you're also my colleague, and I consider all these people my friends and my colleagues. But you're not actually on the front lines when women come to you to say, my mood is really, really bad, and I think hormone therapy might help. This happened as soon as my period stopped, as soon as my period started changing. I'm having suicidal thoughts right now, and this all happened when my periods changed. There's no FDA-approved trial for. There's no randomized controlled trial on that. These academics are not sitting in front of women who say, my symptoms aren't that bad, but I heard you mention, and I've been reading, that estrogen is good for your heart if you start within 10 years of menopause. Doesn't the WHI say that? Can I talk to you about that? Those are real clinical scenarios that I have every single day. And the truth here is that in my opinion, right, is that I don't know if it's female hormone deficiency. I don't know. I don't think we've over-medicalized. I certainly do not. But I am very much for evidence-based medicine. I talk about NAMS. I recommend NAMS. I've sent many people to become NAMS certified. But if you're a clinician like me, if you have seen the whole hex code like me, there are people who are going to come to you with tears in their eyes. I wish I had virtual Kleenexes, because I always had Kleenexes at the Brigham. I always had Kleenexes at Ohio State with tears in their eyes saying, my marriage is falling apart. My life is falling apart. My waistline is falling apart. My sex life is falling apart. And you have to fill in the gaps with your clinical experience and the knowledge that we currently have. And sometimes it's to send somebody away, to say, well, you know, you're only having two hot flashes a day. That's just not enough for me. Those aren't severe enough. But we could start you on an antidepressant, or you could take something over the counter. I'm doing more harm. That's crazy. To say, well, I know it's your mood, and I know you've tried antidepressants before and they didn't work for you, but that's not what hormone therapy is FDA approved for. That's crazy. Because if she's otherwise an excellent candidate, doesn't have any risk factors, has no contraindications to hormone therapy, she can make her own decision about her body. I'm a full body autonomous. You have the right to make a decision. And what about the patient who says, what about the cardiovascular benefits? My take here is, again, let me tell you the data that I have. Sometimes my trick here is I send you for a bone density. I find a T-score of less than -1.1. You got some osteopenia, bang, bang, bang. That does the trick, right? I am always going to err on the side of evidence-based medicine when I'm given, you know, if I need to. And I'm always going to explain to my patients, this is what is FDA approved for. This is what it's not. These are the benefits. These are risks. The risks are low. The risks are really, really low. And I think if you've listened this far, listen up. I think some doctors are just scared to prescribe HRT. And there and again lies this, there is an internal bias of people who are not afraid, potentially all alleged, my opinion only. Am I allowed to have one? I think kind of I am at this point. Please tell me, am I way out of line? Okay. So anyways, you could tell this really, you know, got to me, because the other thing here is that, so there's this two sides of the spectrum that have clearly been laid out publicly and in public. Should we be female hormone deficiency? No, we have over-medicalized it. And I will tell you that I have seen some women for whom those suicidal ideations stopped in their tracks the next day, the next morning. Hot flashes stopped the next day. That's exactly what a deficiency is like. I have some people with subclinical hypothyroidism. They never want to take any thyroid, even though you think, of course, the patient would. No. And they don't need to be treated. And therefore, is it a real deficiency? Maybe, maybe not. I have some patients with an A1C of 6.1. They have prediabetes. Some people are like, yes, sign me up for metformin. Some people are like, no. Is that a deficiency? It's all a spectrum to me. I have some patients I start on HRT because they have some mild to moderate symptoms, some GSM. It makes them feel better, but was it overnight? No, but maybe that wasn't a clear deficiency, but they feel better and they feel confident about their choice. So I actually have been watching this for a very, very, very long time. And it wasn't until I saw a post that made me feel like I wanted to, I actually got put my opinion out there. And this post reads, it was a Facebook comment from someone that said, if you had a thyroid deficiency, you'd be prescribed Synthroid. So if you had an estrogen deficiency, why wouldn't you be prescribed estrogen? I'm just saying. To which person responding said, that's making an assumption that it's deficiency and it should be treated with hormones. And I want to challenge this. Not all women struggle with symptoms. True. Not all women can or should take hormones. True. And you've just made menopause a disease by comparing it to hypothyroidism. You could call hypothyroidism a spectrum as well. It's very rare that you would actually die from hypothyroidism, to be honest. So, you know, I see these points. And again, this is just my opinion because, darn it, I've been a doctor for a really long time. I've seen hundreds of thousands of patients. I've spent probably thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours reading about this, writing about it, podcasting about it, YouTubing about it. I'm allowed to have an opinion. And then she writes, this is in conflict with all medical organizations. I believe it was just the BMJ who signed a consensus statement. I don't think there might be a consensus saying that menopause is a life transition and menopausal hormone therapy should be offered. But that doesn't mean there was a consensus that anyone said it should or shouldn't be a disease, it's over-medicalized or not. That was just an op-ed in the British Medical Journal. It was actually not a global consensus statement. And you will find many doctors, healthcare professionals, all along the spectrum. And all I'm just kind of saying is, I kind of think I fall in the middle, and I think I have a right to why I think that is because, again, if you have sat in my seat, if you've treated thousands upon thousands of women, if you've seen all these different physiologic responses, you would know, you would feel some women really, truly have a deficiency. Some women truly, truly do. Those women are called premature ovarian insufficiency, surgical menopause, any type of menopause before age 45. And then she said, you know, I'm not attacking you personally, but I'm challenging this deficiency narrative. Does it have to be? I don't know. Truth be told, it's a hormone that we make and then we don't. So whether you call it a bye-bye, be gone, or a retirement, or a deficiency, it is something, right? So I pulled you guys over on my Instagram to see what you guys thought about this. If you don't already follow me on Instagram, you totally should. And I got some incredible responses. In fact, many of you said that you actually liked the definition. This person writes, I love hormone deficiency. It actually sounds less pathological. Another woman wrote, I feel like it's a disease and it fits the definition. Natural doesn't mean no treatment or treatment isn't necessary. This woman wrote, diabetics get insulin. Women need estrogen. It's a normal process, and a lot of women do need HRT in order to feel whole. I got a lot of people saying, like, I agree with you, which was probably in relation to this. I don't know if we need to be, you know, I don't know if let's not even call them sides. Let's just call them where you land on the hex code. Are you black or are you white? Right? Are you yellow or are you purple? Let's see. I'm reading some. I agree 100%. I never, ever in my life had suicidal thoughts until I was in menopause. It was awful. Yes, menopause should be considered an estrogen deficiency. This woman wrote to me a couple of times and she was like, I don't understand. Actually, shouldn't all women take HRT? Again, it's very, very interesting. It's a normal process. I got a lot of different comments. My main points here, I think, are to one, just kind of point out that, you know, it's scary for me to say my opinion, even me, it's scary because I don't think that this wasn't meant to be right or wrong. This was really meant to be a professional opinion. And the professional opinion here really truly is that there is a lot of gray zone when it comes to menopause. Everyone is individualized for sure. Some women do respond really, truly like it's deficiency. No one said disease. Some people find the term atrophy offensive. Some people don't. Some people find the word deficiency offensive. Some people feel like it's validating. This is exactly what I felt like, is that, again, it is just creating angst in people. I don't think the over-medicalization has made people anxious. I think that was, you know what I think about that. I think that there is tension because people want attention and resources. And I want you to watch closely the battle between academics and entrepreneurship, particularly a doctor who is being entrepreneurial. Okay. Can you do that for me? Because I need you to watch. Businesses, not so much, but there are also a lot of businesses and business people and business women putting their mark on what they think menopause should be or how that should be branded. Journalists, public figures. Not that it's right or wrong, but I obviously feel as though I really am entitled to an opinion at this point. And it's okay. And I actually really try to not say my opinions all that often. I will if you talk to me in person. I certainly will if you see me as a patient. I love doing that. So those are my main points here. And I want you to see this story. And I want you to come up with your own thoughts. Please feel free to DM me. I'm over at Heather Hirsch on Instagram. I am coming out with a healthcare providers course because I do want people to become NAMS certified. I am excited to see NAMS grow. And like, quite frankly, I think NAMS should put one of those like, oh, did you hear about us? And people can potentially click Heather Hirsch, you know, because I do want more menopause doctors. And I know that not everyone's going to have the exact same opinion. The only opinion that's not okay is pellets. You know how I feel about pellets. You know how I feel about that. That one is harmful, right? There are, we didn't it all even in this conversation. This conversation was really about still using FDA-approved hormone therapy, but to what is it evidence-based? And where are the gaps of where it's evidence-based? And what is the difference between an academic and someone who's on the front lines and seeing patients? What are the tensions between academics and entrepreneurship in medicine? Those are the really kind of main takeaways here. And I want you to watch. And I want you to come up with your thoughts here. Again, to summarize, I very much appreciate this entire conversation because I think all it really does is allow us to continue to talk about this. I really hope I still have all of my friends and my colleagues, and I value their professional opinions, and I value them either because it gives me more of a, you know, what I feel at night when I go to sleep, and my overarching thing, and I think everyone's too, again, all alleged, but I want everyone to have individualized consultative care and for them to make the best decision about their body with the limited research that we have. We do not have randomized control trials on HRT and mood. We do not have enough trials on HRT and prevention. We do not yet have enough trials on HRT and Alzheimer's disease. Is HRT a miracle and will it fix everything? No. Does everybody need it? No. Are you going to be doomed if you don't take it? There's actually tons of non-hormonal options. I talk all about this in my book. Every single menopause type in my book, I talk about hormone therapy and non-hormone therapy. And I have a whole DIY section on lifestyle supplements over the counter. I talk about best fitness, best diet. But do I think many more women should be fully consulted about HRT or have the ability to give it a trial period? That's something I do with my patients all the time. Heck yes. Have we over-medicalized it? In my professional opinion, no. All right. Leave me your thoughts and comments. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I know it was very personal for me, and I hope that you can at least respect the fact that I am also too growing and learning and wanting the best and trying to explain my professional and personal growth. All right, guys. I'll see you next week for a brand new episode. Bye, everyone.
If you love the show and you're dying to work with me, there is a couple of different ways that you can do so. First, I have an incredible menopause course. It's called the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. And don't be fooled, it also is for women in perimenopause. In this course, I teach you how to thrive. It's my signature method to help you figure out what HRT regimen is best and right for you and how to make adjustments and then how to get this from your own doctor. Now, I also see patients in my private telemedicine clinic. I have a license in several states and I'm always working on more. You can go to my website, heatherhirschmd.com, to find out if you want to take the course and join our incredible Facebook group with monthly lives or work with me one-on-one. Now, I hope I get the chance to work with you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.